Welcome to anyone who may be joining us on YouTube. And I don't think that I have any announcements today. Are there any questions or anything before we get started? Okay, well, Hemant, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you then.
Sure, thank you. Hey, in case you see me seeing this way, I'm looking at the larger screen behind the laptop. I'm looking at your faces. So don't mind me. I do want to start before we even get going is to ask, is everybody so far following the syllabus, or they're following the trend that I'm going with this? And do you understand it? Are you lost? You know, just wanted to make sure that you guys are all with me on how this presentation is or these sessions are. Any concerns so far? I can't see everybody, so in case somebody, you see anything, Sarah, let me know.
So, Hemant, Jennifer does say, I've been doing the readings, but not as far along as I want to be. The presentation is great. And Sue, thank you to whoever put the link in the link to the glossary in the chat 2 weeks ago. This has really helped me.
Fantastic. Yes. All right. So let's just bring our minds. First of all, let's do the three prostrations. We always say Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamashriye. If you don't know or don't feel like doing it, that's perfectly fine. But at least if you are on the floor and you want to do it, that's great. If not, at least mentally offer being humble and accept the teachings so that you're open-minded. And this is the best way to do it. So I'm just going to do three prostrations, okay? And we do three of them. Okay. Is there anybody that's his first time? Do we have anybody first time, Linda?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. So we're going to bring our mind to the class. Again, we have busy days, and I'm sure some of you have jobs, work, home, activities. So it's good to just let that go for the moment. And you have things to do probably. Either right now or after the class or tomorrow. But for this moment, hour and a half or hour, whatever we do, just keep your mind here and just be open to learning. Okay, so thank you with that. So let's start with a calm abiding posture. We already know where you need to keep your eyes, your legs are folded properly. If not, you're sitting in a chair. Keep the feet flat. Keep your back straight. You're not stretching out, nor you're leaning inside your in your chair, just kind of a straight, like a stacked coins. Obviously, you want to keep your right hand over your left hand, and your thumbs are touching each other, and your mouth is relaxed, your jaws are relaxed, your tongue is touching the tip behind the top teeth, and mouth is slightly open to allow the air to go through. Again, all of these postures have several meanings. They allow the wind channels inside your energy systems to work properly, and you're relaxed and not sweaty or uncomfortable. That's the whole idea. So you can sit for a while without paying attention to your arms or legs. And you need to scan your body and just see if there's any discomfort anywhere and you want to readjust. And we do this with keeping our mind on our breath. Breath is neutral. There is no story. We breathe every single day. And so you just focus on breath. It does two things. It not only calms your chatter down, but you also learn how to concentrate. It's one of the six perfections that we will go through sometime. And so you learn to concentrate, and what happens is you will find yourself, thoughts will come. Just don't latch onto them. Don't get into the story. Watch them. Know that they are thoughts, but then tell your mind to come back to the breath. Let's do that for 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll do a motivation. Thank you. So allow yourself to be completely present for this time, this session, and recognizing that usually our lives are filled with busy activities, simply concerned with survival or the short-term comfort and happiness of this life. Of the 24 hours, usually a third of that time is spent working, a third of that time is spent sleeping, and the remaining time is usually spent doing things like shopping or groceries or so forth, or preparing and eating and so forth. The percent of our entire life that we actually spend in spiritual practice, making concerted effort, is very, very small. Yet, we have great wishes for what we like to accomplish. And so, make the determination that since the time that I spend in my spiritual life is very small and usually somewhat distracted, I will make my best effort to listen carefully and to try to put everything that I learn into practice to the best of my ability. And why? Because I want to experience happiness. I have some suspicion that there is a greater happiness available, a longer lasting happiness that I could attain. I have some suspicion that I could develop greater wisdom, greater compassion, greater ability to help others. And if I check up in my heart, that's what I wish to do. And the Buddha's claim is that he found another way. He identified suffering. He identified its causes. He achieved the end of suffering and then revealed the path. So I wish to follow the same path, attain that same state, and then reveal that method to others. Invite to this place our teachers and guides of this life, those who are carrying the lineage of these precious teachings to this present day. Ask them to abide with us and bless our minds for this time as we listen to these teachings on behalf of all living beings. You can bring your attention back to the class now. And thank you. It's amazing, even for 2 or 3 minutes of calm abiding, it does calm the chatter down. At least it does to me. Okay, so as the format goes, I usually go through the first two classes in short, just as a summary. So we keep the link. Okay, so remember what we are doing. Graduated path to liberation, right? So that's what we're doing step by step. We're moving forward. And so it was very important, according to Lambrin, to understand our lineage and the qualities of our teachers and so forth. And if you remember, we started with, this is, by the way, the third class of the module number 3, okay? And so we've already completed 2 of them. And so I think we are pretty much on our way now, okay? And we looked at the video in the beginning that Linda shared with us from Discovering Buddhism, and you recognize the 12 deeds, right? And just quickly, how Buddha left Tushita, his place, how he was born, how he learned his craft so quickly, how he was married and lived a luxurious life, but then he decided to renunciate, how he practiced and learned from teachers, and how he became enlightened, and so forth. And in the end, he wound up teaching for 35, 40 years, and in the end, he passed away to Parinirvana. With that, those are, like, in short, the 12 of the deeds. I may have missed one or two there. We also looked at some of the teachers from FBMT that spoke about each of those major pieces. For example, Venerable Kellen Wellham talked about the 2 attitudes of Hinayana and Mahayana. And all that means is we need all of the teachings. And sometimes these are known as the lower vehicle and the higher vehicle. It is not one is bigger than the other. You need both of them. However, the lower vehicle or the Hinayana attitude is more on the liberation of individual, whereas the Mahayana expresses that or brings in the portion of bodhicitta or compassion. And that is when you go beyond just liberation to enlightenment. Okay? And then you had Venerable Robina Corden, and she talked about the two wings, and she talked about some logical views and how logical this entire graduated path is and why we take refuge. And then one of the students who also writes for a lot of these sessions, Kendall Magnusson, and she talked about her experience that in the beginning she wanted to just gather knowledge and wanted to be enlightened really quick, and found out that she had to slow down and integrate some of these things. Right? We can talk all these things, but if you don't take it slowly and steadily and do something with your mind, then it's not going to help you too much, right? You will be knowledgeable and you can speak to it, but it's not necessarily helpful for your journey. So we took a look at that. And then obviously we also talked about the three paths, the way a student or somebody who's listening to this must, what kind of attitude they must have. We don't want to be the upside down part. We don't want to be a part with a hole in it, and we don't want to come to the class like full of like a dirty part, right? Because everything you learn is poisoned, or what you learn from goes into one ear and comes out of the other ear, and if it's upside down, then nothing is going in. So people think about something else. So just be here. Those are the three parts. By the way, if somebody's taking certification in DB, this is a good question to remember, the three parts. Okay? Then we did some analogy of why graduated path and how important it is. It's so easy for us to understand high school, junior school, college, no problem. We have a graduated path. Or when we go to make a trip somewhere, we make a plan. I'll do this and I'll have a gas, I have the toll money and blah, blah, blah. And we made an analogy with New York. And I made a joke about if you don't have a real good plan, you might get stuck in New Jersey someplace, right? So remember those things. And how fortunate we are to have this path available to us. And then class two, no, then we talked about the small scope and the middle scope and the great scope, different topics that we are covering now. And it is, again, based on the fundamentals you need. It's not like one is better than the other. It builds upon each other. And they're done in such a way so your knowledge and your integration is done properly. So it's done very nicely. And you wouldn't want to put somebody from third grade into the eighth grade right away, right? So think in those terms, too. It's very nicely step-by-step done. So anyways, later on in class two, we went and talked about Buddha's life. He was named Siddhartha Gautama, and then what he went through was, I spent a lot of time on telling the story about his birth, how auspicious that was, how he grew up, how he got married, how he renunciated, how he practiced under different teachers, how he was even practiced some austere practices like fasting and just hard practice, and he realized that the best way was the middle way. Not the extreme of the palace life and not the extreme of total starvation. And so he took the food and then he went under the tree. He got enlightened. He had a lot of delusions attack him, but he was unshaken, and ultimately he was enlightened. And only then he was called Buddha. Okay. So we talked about that. Very importantly, we talked about our tradition and what marvelous teachers, what practiced yogis and practitioners is our lineage, including His Holiness Dalai Lama, Gelugpa tradition. And we shortly talked about Lama Atisha's life. This is another question you should remember. You know, where does Lam Rim come from? Who wrote it initially? Where did he write it? And what country was he when it was written? So this is somewhere in 11th century. Atisha was invited by the king of Tibet. He saw the plot was lost, though there were many yogis and practitioners there. It was 84,000 teachings all over the place. And so he created a beautifully nice book lamp for the path. And that's the beginning of your Lam Rim. He organized all these teachings into a very nice bucket, right, basically. So we learned a little bit about that. And so let me move forward, because I have a tendency to speak. So give me a second here. It's not moving. So let me see where my mouse is. Okay. I think it is stuck. Give me a second. Okay. I found my mouse. So this is what I just went through, and we
go up and down, up and down.
Okay, so we went through Gautama's life. We talked about Lama Tisha, the lamp for the path, and then the real lineage teacher who started the Gelugpa tradition, Lama Tsongkhapa. If I were you, at your free time, if you have any, I would read up on them, their biography. You will be amazed to see how accomplished practitioners they were. Just very powerful, very powerful. In between, there were many Indian scholars who were also invited or wrote something. For example, Nagarjuna, who talked about emptiness, and sunyata is another way of saying emptiness. And then his student in 7th century, for example, was Chandrakirti, who expanded on this logic and how logical and factual they were. Okay, this all comes from a tradition of schooling in India called Nalanda, one of the largest universities of the time that taught Buddhism. Okay, so just be aware, when you're reading these things, it's not that you need to memorize these names, but you'll come across this when you're reading your book and it says, according to Nagarjuna, according to Chandrakirti, it should click in. Okay, oh, well, we heard this name. And so you should be familiar with some of those names. And it also solidifies your conviction that this is not something that somebody just sat down one day and said, yeah, let's just do this, you know. It comes from a long tradition all the way from Buddha. So this was very important. And then we talked about the three scopes, right? So let's go through the three preliminaries. And today we actually started on death and impermanence. Okay, so I'm going backwards here, sorry. Okay, not only that, we went through some definitions. We talked about what is nirvana, liberation, and it again goes to those two attitudes, right? The Hinayana attitude is nirvana, and the person is looking for his or her own escape from suffering. Already a marvelous accomplishment. Just think of them. They are not coming back in samsara. They have liberated themselves. However, some minor habits stay behind. It is habits of just so many lifetimes, and they need to be removed also. And that comes through going for full awakening of Buddhahood, and you have to get the compassion piece in it. And then now you have the power and the wisdom both, and that's when you get enlightened. We talked about samsara. This word comes up all the time, but it is nothing but a cycle of life and death that we continuously cycle in all the time. Okay? We also understood the root of samsara is ignorance. Not knowing the self, how it exists, the I, and also not knowing how all the phenomena exist. Okay, we'll touch upon that when you come to this section. And so that's exactly what ignorance is, not seeing that which exists, or in the way the things exist, right? And there are three poisons that keep us down or connected to samsara. And the very first one is ignorance, already defined, attachment, and aversion or anger. We talked about qualities of Buddha, right? So I had mentioned that if you are interested in taking this path, if you're interested in liberating yourself and wanting to become enlightened, at least we should understand what Buddha is. What does that mean? Where am I going? Because fear can set in sometimes, like, and I don't know what it is. What am I doing? What is the happiness? You know, we don't even know how to define it properly. So it's wonderful to know the qualities of the Buddha. And just remember, a wisdom that knows exactly what and how reality is, and who, because he has literally all-knowing mind, with the capacity to do what needs to be done to perfectly benefit all beings. So all-knowing, all compassionate, all wise, all pervading. That's the ultimate nature of mind, Buddhahood. we always talk about compassion and bodhicitta, right? So it's important to know what bodhicitta is, okay? It is a principle consciousness that combines, basically it is the wish to benefit others is the main point, okay? You can break it down into much more details like I have in two different parts, but the idea is really a good wish to benefit others, period. Okay, we'll cover the five aggregates when I get to the point where we are using the word five aggregates. Right now, all you need to know, these are psychophysical constituents that make up the sentient being. You know, things like our form, feelings that we have, this feeling of the mind, discriminative or perception, and you know, the awareness of everything around us, and the compositional factors are things like things our mind chatters with. If once you come up with a thought, I'll do this, I'll do that, everything else, how our mind just works on something, and then you do it, right? And then you need the base is your consciousness. All of these things are called five aggregates. That's what gives us identity. We think this is me, right? That I comes in because of these five constituents. And as you start to cleanse yourself, as you start to purify yourself, you will see that these aggregates become purer and purer and purer till you become Buddha. This is a new one today. So we say, okay, do dharma practice. So what is dharma? Okay. The second refuge jewel, of course, we say Buddha, dharma, and the Sangha. So what is dharma? That which is established but generally atomized, or that which holds, protects us from suffering. That's what I will go with. That which holds us and protects us from suffering and hence brings happiness and leads us towards liberation and enlightenment. Okay? It's also good to know what a merit is. And we'll cover this again in a very layman's terms. Okay? These are very definitive definitions, and so I just put it there. So positive imprints left on the mind by virtuous or dharma actions. Those are merits. And you say you accumulate merits by virtuous actions. Okay, so you want to continue to build those. Why? It's like a bank balance, right? More seeds, positive seeds you put in your mind, guess what? You are reaching towards your goal to become a Buddha. Okay, if the merits go down, there are a lot of people with merits, then they take another birth because of some very strong tendency of a non-virtuous action, and guess what? They may get some beautiful life. However, when the merits run out and those seeds burn out, you're back in the cycle. And our goal is to get out of that cycle. Okay, so merits are important. So when they say help out, go and circumambulate, help out in the Gampa, or do these things, then it's you're creating merits. Doing virtuous actions with generosity, your patience by listening to me today, for example. Morality, right? Doing it with joy, wanting to learn, right? Developing concentration, and ultimately you will understand how reality is. That's the part of this DD that will take you into that module, and we talk about emptiness for like 6 or 7 classes. Okay? At least understand these parts. Okay, and then we went through the preliminary contemplations. These were what I call the primers. In order for you to understand the scopes and the topics, it's important to know the nature of the mind. Second, it's good to understand the need for a spiritual teacher and the precious human rebirth. I can certainly go into details, but at least you know nature of the mind. It is your own. It is not physical, right? And it is all, nature is to know, right? And so virtuous action, happy life. Non-virtuous action, not such a good life. Simple, right? And even spiritual teacher, we talked about, you know, whenever the word guru or spiritual teacher comes up, our defenses of, at least some of us, the defenses may come up, then why do I need to have a teacher? And we talked about that. That you've always had a teacher. Somebody taught you how to walk. Somebody taught you how to eat. Somebody taught you in kindergarten. So we've always had teacher, and you want to learn, get to know the teacher. And we are not saying blindly follow. You have to judge. If the teacher is judging you, but you also judge the teacher. You look at their peers. You look at their students. It takes a long time. It can take up to 10 years. But once you find it, then there's a way to then devote your time, and you see him like a Buddha because he's teaching you. He's teaching Buddha's words to you. And so once you have that, it's a very strong seed for to become a Buddha, to receive Buddha. Okay? And then obviously we talked about the precious human rebirth. Right? It is very rare. And so the point of the precious human rebirth is that you have this opportunity, right, to recalibrate is the word I'm looking for, I guess. Because we do all kinds of things and we don't know right or wrong, but you can learn the teachings of the Buddha who experienced it himself and is telling you the path. And you need to investigate. I'm not even saying that you blindly fall into this, right? You need to investigate, learn and understand, is this working? Is this good? Is this right? Once you have that conviction, then you know that you have this chance to do something. Some of us may feel like I don't have that much life left and I'm already too old. None of that matters. In scheme of things or in lives, your mental continuity, you've done all kinds of things, good and bad. So anytime you recognize it and you do something about it, it's a beautiful start. You're back on path. Does it really matter? So that's the urgency of it. Okay? So we looked at that. So now you know it is beginningless. Your mind, it's your own, not physical, has a marvelous potential. The whole spectrum of your inner experience is your mind. Enlightenment is the potential of your mind. So that's your goal. Okay? We talked about a spiritual teacher. We went through this beautiful statement from Nick Reibusch. Even if we have the opportunity and the interest, we have been taught to practice. Finding a perfectly qualified teacher is the most important thing in life. And once we have found the teacher, we must follow him or her correctly. This is the root of the path of enlightenment. So you need to contemplate on it. Okay? Precious human rebirth. If you remember, we had the 8 richnesses and few endowments. And what it's telling you is, think about it. You have this precious human rebirth. You have faculties right now that reasonably work. You are sitting and learning today in a session, Dharma. Okay? You're not in a place where Dharma is not taught. So when you look at some of these richnesses we have in life, that you have a sane mind and reasonable conditions, that you have a precious human rebirth and you can do something about it. Okay? So this was your 3 contemplations. Very quickly, very important to know, this is your base. Now everything we build from here on out, we are getting into the first scope after this, death and impermanence. Okay, now you're going to start to learn the topics, but in back of your mind, you should keep this in somewhere in your mind. What is mind? I need to learn more about mind. Of course, if you took DB1, then you should know mind and its potential. He talks about 6 primary minds, 51 mental factors, and all kind of, it gets really deep into it. But then you understand why mind is beginningless, and it's non-physical, not created, and has the potential to continue to become a Buddha. Then, of course, necessity for teachers we just talked about, and a precious human rebirth. So the whole point is, let's not waste it. If you are convinced and you have some sort of a eagerness to learn and want to learn, then this is your chance, right? That's the point of this. Again, it's stuck, so give me 1 second, there you go. Okay, these are the 3 scopes. I put emptiness and I bridged it between the 2, second scope and third scope, for the reason, by saying that Hinayana group, for example, when you have learned the wisdom side, which are the first 2 scopes, you are liberated. You understand how things exist. However, with bodhicitta, emptiness is also there as the 6th perfection. So I kept it as in both, but these are the 3 scopes and the topics that we are getting an overview on. Okay, these are, I don't know what's going on here. But in small scope, we will go through death and impermanence, future rebirths, very short on that, a quick thing on refuge, why we take refuge, and the laws of karma, which is a little bit lengthy. Okay, in the middle scope, which is the next time, once we finish the karma, we will start with the Four Noble Truths, the first teachings of the turning of the wheel of Buddha, the true cause of suffering, and we'll find out the 12 branches of dependent arising. And all that means is, what is it that keeps us coming back again and again and again? And there are 12 links. Okay, and then we'll touch a bit on emptiness, liberation and understanding of reality. And matter of fact, next class, when we start the middle scope, we have three meditations. The three principal aspects of the path we'll talk about. One is once you realize what this life cycle is about and how you keep on cycling through, you want to get a feeling of you don't want to have that happen to you. You are sincerely trying to improve yourself. That's called renunciation. Okay? And then the second piece is you need to understand how things exist, how phenomena exist, and how self exists. And third thing is, what is compassion and bodhicitta and how you put that into your life? Those three things are what you need in order to become enlightened. And then these are subtopics underneath all of these. This is kind of giving you an idea of what you need to be aware of. Okay? So, and then of course we totally finish this. Okay, so anyway, the last things we'll talk about the bodhicitta, sixth perfection. And as you can see, wisdom of emptiness is also part of the sixth perfection. So today's topic, death and impermanence. You're going to go through the death process. We'll introduce you to the realms and the refuge and abiding by the laws of karma. We'll begin to do that depending on the time we may or may not finish. And that will be the pattern part of classes topics today. So let's talk about death and impermanence. Okay. The first point you need to understand is we all intellectually understand death, right? It's part of our life. But we ignore it. Don't we? We ignore it. Why? Because there's a fear. And it's important to know that even though we know this, we have taught ourselves not to think about it. It will happen tomorrow. It will be another day. I'm only 40. I'm only 50. I'm only 61. We continue to put that away. Okay. Good question. Oh, my wife is telling me what to press in order to not go back sometimes. Okay. The second point we need to learn is time of the death is uncertain. You and I don't know when we are going to die. You know, sometimes Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, every morning, think about it, today could be the day. You'll be amazed how good you make your day then, if you're sincere about it, right? Because that is how it is. You can lose your life any time. And the time of the death is extremely important. So we'll cover that a little bit. Okay. So basically, teaching this is a wake-up call. Again, right? It's, remember the goal of the three contemplation and the first scope is that we are striving for a better life. So in order to strive for a better life, you need to bring some reality in front of you, the conventional reality or what happens to us, you know, how we think and how we are in this denial sense. We live in a denial. So this is very important to understand that the time of the death is extremely important. Why? Because then you can do something about it. We already know if you have virtuous mind and you have no fear, then those seeds will ripen. Correct? And if you have a non-virtuous mind that's eating you up all the time and you're grasping and craving and you are at the deathbed and you don't know what's going to happen to you, guess what you're going to have? Fear. Right? And so why not put it in front of you and know that you want to be happy, you want to be liberated. It is simply a process, very logical process. Okay? And you already know that everything is cause and effect, a little bit of karma here. But think about it. Your previous thought created this thought. Anything that is the cause creates an effect and it's passing. It's moving constantly. Right? Even Geshe La talked about this very nicely. Somebody asked him then, where does the mind come from? What is the beginning? Everybody wants to know what's the beginning. Right? But mind is beginningless. when he talked about how sperm and the egg comes together, you're just forming a body. And the mind, after passing, we'll go through that, how it's looking for, based on karma and the propensity, it comes and sits on it. And they're separate entities, but now they function together. And he talks about that. And even if you look at logic, even if you don't have to go into the details, and if you look at logic, we can very easily understand that find anything that does not have a cause that you do. If I lift my hand and put food in my mouth, I eat. If I want to walk through the door, I have intention, I go there, I open the door, I go outside the door. Every cause and effect goes on and on and on. And so whatever you put in your mind has an effect. Good things, happier life. You put non-virtuous things, you're creating a whole compounding effect of things that can happen. So that's the idea behind the time of the death is extremely important. So if you're again taking certifications, remember these 3 points. So I'm going to go through very quickly for your knowledge sake, the death stages. Okay? So you and I are all made up of these basic 4 elements, right? We all know earth, water, fire, and air. Everything is basically has those components to be a matter, right? So in the first stage, so there's 2 things that happen. There are 8 stages. First 4 stages of the death process is called the gross conscious dissolution. And the last 4 are actually called the subtle consciousness dissolution. Okay? So you can read about that. Many books, I will even give you some names. They go very deep into every stage and everything. However, I think it's important to just have some knowledge about it. Okay? So think about this now. So the growth stages, the first one is the earth element dissolves. So as you are now in the death process, the very first thing that goes, matter of fact, I'll even tell you, in connection with our certain inner and outer signs that we will walk through, some yogis are so good that they're able to control this entire process, able to control it. They're so strong and focused that they can actually go and their propensity of karma, they can actually go into the birth that they want, control that. That's what they said. So you can imagine, you can train your mind. Okay? So the first stage is the earth element dissolves. So various parts of your body and mind cease to function. The body gets thinner. And then you feel like you're sinking under the earth. Let me see if I can get to the next slide. It doesn't work. Okay. There we go. It's working now. Sorry about that. There's some delay or something in the Wi-Fi here that is apparently causing some problems. So the first one is the gross consciousness is called the dissolution of earth element. And what happens in this is you feel like you're sinking in the earth. Body is weak, it's powerless, and all your strength is consumed. And what they say, the internal experience or the sign is that of a mirage. And for those who may or may not know, a mirage is when you go in a desert or when you walk on a hot pavement or when you go in the ocean, sometimes you see reflections that look so real. But when you go there, they're not there. That's called a mirage. So you sense that kind of an experience, okay? And when we talk about aggregates, you will know that I talked about constitutes us as an individual. One is the form, feeling, discrimination, all the mental activities and consciousness. So in this stage, the form element dissolves. You lose the concept of form. Then the second, and if this is happening right away, okay, it's not like what happens, finishes, and you wait in the second stage. It's a nice continuous stages. And the water element dissolves next. So your body fluids begin to dry up. So your sweat and blood and urine and so forth, they start to dry out. No longer do you experience the 3 types of feelings. And those are the pleasure, the pain, and the neutral feeling. Okay? In this case, the ear consciousness goes down. It ceases to function. And the internal sign, they say, is that of a smoke puffing in the sky. That's what the internal experience is. And the aggregate form of the feeling, aggregate of the feeling is dissolved. The third resolution is that the fire element dissolves. Okay, so what happens, you not digesting any food, if you give them food or drinks or anything like that, it's not going anywhere. No longer mindful of affairs of your close ones. You can't recognize all of those things. Unable to remember the names of your of the close persons. Okay, and then the nose consciousness is weak. The inhalation is weak. And so exhalation is lengthy, but the inhalation is weaker. Okay, and the internal sign is like fireflies or sparks. Okay, and the aggregate of the discrimination and perception goes away. So now we go to the fourth stage. Okay, the wind element dissolves. Okay, so the 10 winds, the winds are the energies in the body, and there are three main channels, one in the center near your spine. There are two spirals that are major, big, these are the three major wind channels. And so what happens is, at this point, all the winds start to come towards the heart. And inhalation and exhalation ceases. You can no longer move or do anything. No longer mindful of external worldly activities or purpose. Tongue sense or consciousness, it becomes thick. The root of the tongue becomes blue, okay, and the breath goes out and no longer comes in. The air element ceases, so you no longer are breathing. And the tactile consciousnesses are all not functioning now, right? So all the compositional factors are finito. Now, at this point, you might see a flat line in the monitor and people think you're dead. But they say, wait, you are not dead yet. There's still a lot of activity going on in your body, believe it or not. And this is the second piece. But just a couple of points. During this time, it's very important to keep appropriate environment around the person who's passing. You don't know what stages they're in, right? You nobody's telling you, oh, I'm in the second stage, I'm in the third stage. It's just happening spontaneously. So it's very important to keep a quiet, serene environment. Matter of fact, they have CDs in FPMT that they suggest you play. Anything during even mildest awareness, if a seed is planted, it benefits immensely to that person. So you want to create a very conducive environment, okay, for a person passing by. And that even comes to helping animals. Animals are sentient. Remember the word sem means mind in Tibetan. Chen means possessor, a mind possessor. They're no different. So when they're passing, it's important that you give them a quiet place, hold them close so they have no fear, some blessings. And even if you do some prayers, they don't understand prayers. They don't understand Tibetan or Sanskrit or some of these words. But even a little imprint that goes in, it benefits the animal. Okay, so you're thinking those jumps. So now we're going to jump to the last four subtle consciousness resolution. Okay, so let me see if I can, I have a slide on that, I think. Okay, there we go. The first one is called the white appearance resolution. And the vision or the internal experiences of a vast sky. And rather than going into a lot of the details, what happens is the winds in your right and left channels above your heart, so this all this area, they start to come down from the head. They start to concentrate and come down. And you get this clear vacuity, a lack of thought, but filled with white light. And many yogis can actually recognize this subtle sign of the vast sky. This is an aside. Then what happens after that is now you're slowly moving into the mind of the white appearance dissolves. And what happens is the winds in the right and the left channels below the heart start to come towards the central channel and at the base of the spine. So they start to collect. So they all meet, one on the top and one in the bottom. And they come into the central channel and they start to rise up. The internal sign, what you see is clear vacuity. You start to see the heat of the body going away completely, and what you see is like a red sky. Okay? The color is like a red sky. And then what happens, the mind of the red dissolves. What happens is the upper and the lower winds now gather at the heart. They're beginning to concentrate, but not coming to the heart. And so these winds then enter at the drop of the heart. Just a small piece gets into the heart. Internal sign is the first vacuity filled with like a black sky, darkness. It's called black vision. And then the eighth, last one, the mind of black near attainment is dissolved. And causes of all appearance and winds dissolve into this very subtle life-bearing wind. It's called the indestructible drop at the heart. Okay? Eternal sign, a very clear vacuity, the mind of clear light of death, known as indestructible consciousness. There is no judging. Your karma goes with you. The seeds of the karma, that subtle seed, that's what takes you. Propensity is there. Now the consciousness is ready to get out of the body. It's leaving the body. Okay? So those are the eight stages you go through. And if you practice being aware of this, and if you are practice and you lose fear, and you practice virtuous action, guess what your last thoughts are and you're going to carry with you? Are good virtuous thoughts. So this, it's important to know this, not important to understand unless you are interested knowledge-wise, each stage and what happens and what color and all that. That's not the important part. The part is we go through this process. It is very natural. It is quite logical. And nobody's sitting there waiting to see what did you do wrong, what did you do right. Your own karma has the propensity to then become go to the next life. All right. So let's see if I can progress forward. We've done that. So now, what happens is, you go into this stage called bardo, or intermediate stage. Your consciousness is on autopilot. It recognizes the I is gone. That identity is not there. It doesn't know all that intelligently. It just knows. It just feels it needs to be somewhere. This is what happens. You go unconscious. You have a clear light mind. You wake up in a dream. You're in an intermediate state. It's like going to sleep and waking up. Now, instinctively, a sense of powerful sense of identity takes place. There's fear sometimes. Instinctively grasping and looking for another rebirth. So this is what they call bardo. It could take up to 7 weeks. Or last only seconds, and you can take birth. Okay? So then, as I mentioned earlier, how your subtle consciousness mixes with the new body, the egg and the sperm, which are separate entities, but joined together, and then depend on one another, and there's the new birth. Okay, so this is okay. Any question on that? Just the process. Now that you have the base, that the mind is continuous. It is beginningless. It does not have a form. It's not a brain. It's not physical. It's your own. So now think about it. You go through this process. You have this opportunity of precious human rebirth. You're going to now move on. What kind of bank balance you want to take with you and what you want to create? That's the point. And remember, the first scope is striving for better happiness or better life. Right? So it's important to understand the death process. It's not supposed to be scary. Just face it. Look at it. It is going to happen. It is definite. Time is uncertain. And only Dharma can help you. That's the point of this whole session. That is up to you. But the point is to just express that to you because it's in the teachings. Okay? So now, again, now what happens to the mind that is going, where is it going to go? Well, that's up to you. It's your mind. What have you taken with you? If you've taken some non-virtuous tendencies with you, you can have a state of mind that is of suffering. If you have some good karma, you can go, they have six realms, which I'm not going to go much detail into the realms. You can read in the Liberation in Palm of Your Hand or pick up a Lamrim book. There's lots of writing on it, very much detailed. And you can certainly read about all different states of minds. But, you know, just for purposes of our class and overview, there are three upper realms and three lower realms. Think of them as dimensions. You know, our mind goes crazy. Is it like Mars? Is it like Venus? You know, where do I go? So think of them as dimensions. If nothing, quality of your mind. Okay? You can actually go through a dimension. Don't we see animals around us right now? That is a realm. And you can see them with your own eyes. So you can see these realms are dimensions. And there's a desire realm, which is the God realm, they call it sometimes. Okay? And then there is a demigod. So desire realm, they say the life is long, you have all the luxuries, you have all comforts and everything. However, you don't practice dharma because you have all the comforts. You are in just la-la land, right, in the happiness of that moment. And so you don't think about dharma. And you don't think that when this runs out, just like a bank balance, what will happen? You're back in that cycle again based on your karmic activities. Okay? And demigod realms also very prosperous. Good life, long life, big sizes, they say, you can be in. However, they're always fraught with jealousy, quarrels. So they're called like demigods. The third realm is human realm, which we are in. Again, we have some moments of happinesses, some suffering, dissatisfactions in life, but probably the best life to practice dharma. So it's a desirable state of life. If you're going to be in the cyclic existence, and if you have you're still moving towards your Buddhahood, probably a good state to be in human life, because if you carry these positive karmic seeds, you can practice dharma again and continue on your journey. Obviously, you don't want to be in the animal realm. You already know how they torture each other. You know, don't always think about your pet dog or pet cat. Think about animals in general, and you will very quickly see. I saw the other day a crow taking away a baby of a bird, and the bird following the mother trying to frantically save the baby. It was just so depressing for me to even watch that. However, things like that happen, right? And think about even if your pets, they may be living a luxurious life, some do, and even then they can't practice dharma. Right? So important to know that. Obviously, there's ghost realms and hell realms where you can be very cold, very famished, no food, all kind of things. Even if you don't believe in dimensions, even if you don't understand it, you can read and understand it. Buddha says they exist, many exist. We are just a tiny bit of the whole population of all of these things. That's what Buddha says. But think of reality, even in today's conventional world, you could be born in a place where there is no water. You see babies sometimes dying in mother's arms because they can't feed them. You see that all the time. You know, there are also life forms that will survive in volcano with sulfuric acid. You can think about burning hell. It could be a possibility. So you don't know. And all I can tell you is we are very lucky to have human realm, and it's fortunate that we have this opportunity to do something about it. That's the main point. You don't want to create a mindset to be born in suffering realms. That is the main point. Okay?
We do have a question.
Yes.
Rebecca asks, if in the desire realm you don't practice, but you practice as a human, do you have to skip the desire and demigod realms to reach enlightenment?
Okay, so just two-part question. You can wish for it and may have practiced enough to go to a higher realm. However, remember, the merits and the karmic seeds burn out. You're still in the samsara. All of these realms are within the cyclic existence. You're not totally liberated. You're not totally out of this. So what happens when you run out then you come back to whatever realm, depending on your propensity, your karmic seeds, and your tendencies, your habits. Right? So those things we work on. And that's why we talk about not only learning those things, and even if you follow this or not, integrating positive mindset, how can it hurt you? It's beautiful. It's really amazing, and it's very relieving. It's very liberating. So Keshala says many times, try it sometimes. You know, when you talk nicely, humbly, have a smile on your face, see how people, is there anybody that is of any race, color, place, size, richness, poorness, that does not want to be happy? We all want to be happy. So just be a kind person. Okay? It doesn't mean you have to be a doormat, but there's firmness in it. But don't create anger in you or aversion in you. That's what we're trying to say. So these are practices. And Geshe-la always says, whatever you learn, try to slowly and steadily integrate it. Do some meditations and think about where your mind goes and look at the thought. What's really consuming you? And those, we have plenty of meditations how to work on that, from karma body to analytical meditation. And then you go through 9 stages of meditation, which we'll cover in the last class. And that at some point, your mind can focus and stay there for days at a time. Right now, for 2 minutes, 1 minute, and your mind is already in a story. Even if you see a purple color or a green color, you're already swimming in it, right? But you need to learn. And that's why we do this little calm abiding meditation at the beginning, because it starts you to bring your back to the breath. Bring it back to the breath. It's now training yourself to do that. Okay? Did I answer the question? So it's not about a wish going to desire realm. You know, out of all the realms, if you had a wish, I personally think human realm would be best, because then I can continue with my practice. You know, and desire realm, you are in such a state of life, you don't even think about dharma. Because your goal is to reach Buddhahood, not just have states of happy or luxurious life, or a demigod with all the things you need, property, but you're always jealous and fighting and all that. So think about that. They say that it's desirable to ask for a precious human rebirth. If you're in the cyclic existence, that would be a good opportunity for you to practice. So you don't burn your merits out and then you're back in the cycle again. So that's all I know. Now there's some beautiful writing in the Pabongka Rinpoche's book about all of these things and why you should think that way. Okay, so now we feel strongly, say, supposedly, that we don't want to suffer in lower realms. We know the fact that death can come any time. Time of the death is indefinite. And it's important to carry your continuity because your mind continues. So how can I make it positive? Because virtuous mind is going to take you to a virtuous life, lives, okay, or state of mind. And then we understand the preciousness of this human rebirth. So we know mind, we understand we have teachings coming from lineage teachers. We may choose or not choose, but at this point in time, we have some nice lineage teachings. We understand the 6 realms of suffering. So now what do I do? Where do I begin? So for that, you take a refuge. What does that mean? So there's a whole class on DB Module 7 that talks about refuge in the 3 jewels. We'll talk about that a little bit. So to just give you the overview of what a refuge is, what you're saying is, okay, I understand, I am convinced I need to take a path so I can change my mind, I can be a better person, and I can get my future lives to be in a good state. So what do? I take a refuge. In other words, I say that I take refuge, like a child takes refuge in mother. When something happens, where do they run? Mommy, right? That's called refuge. When it's raining, we take umbrella. It's taking refuge under the umbrella. Same way, for your spiritual journey, with 84,000 teachings, and you're convinced that Buddha, who experienced enlightenment, has given us these fantastic teachings and has shown us the path, and our teachers have put that in an organized way, where do I begin? Well, in one way, you are already started by attending the classes and beginning to accumulate some merits and beginning to learn and to learn about what this is all about. But when you are ready for it and when you know that you really need a doctor and you are sick, you're tired of this life, of this dissatisfactory life, you want better life or you want a better state of mind, I want to show me the way. So now you go to the doctor, that is Buddha. Right? Now, why Buddha? Because he taught us so many beautiful things. He taught us about how mind works, how positive mind works, how negative mind works, mind's continuity. He experienced it. He taught us to 84,000 teachings. So that's what you're looking at. And then you obviously want to imbibe or take in the teachings of Buddha. That's your second jewel. And the third jewel is what we call Sangha, or there's a parlance to two sides. Some people say the community, and some people say the monks and the nuns of the particular tradition. So that's your community, and they help you. So the analogy would be the doctor is the Buddha, the medicine is the Dharma, and the Sangha are like the nurses. Think about it. You can accumulate all the medicine you want, go to all these classes, memorize this, but not integrated. It's like picking up medicine from your pharmacy and collecting in your cupboard and not taking it. And then saying, how come my problem doesn't go away? Right? So think of it in realistic terms that way. And that's why we take refuge. It's a beautiful ceremony. You have to ask a teacher to give you a refuge. So in other words, you have to identify a teacher. You know, take your time, learn, and then say, yes, I'm ready. I want to be on this path, and I'm going to be serious. This is more of your commitment. This is not for outside world to think, oh, look, I can put a label on myself, and I'm a Buddhist. No. But you are then in the Buddhist path, right? So you do that. It's a beautiful ceremony. You take some vows. Usually they'll tell you to even take precepts. And so these words are important to understand. What is the precept? It's actually, if you go to the Kadampa Center site, and 8 Mahayana precepts are there actually on the site. It tells you what they are. So what they tell you is, for 24 hours from the morning dawn till the sunrise, you don't do certain things. You want to humble yourself. You will not kill even the insects. You will not steal. Don't take something that doesn't belong to you. You will not engage in a sexual activity. You will not lie. You will not use intoxicants. And you will not create pride by sitting on some very luxurious beds and putting jewelry on and cologne and perfumes and all that kind of stuff. So they tell you to humble. You come with clear mind in front of a teacher. And then you say, please take me. He will walk you through the refuge process. A lot of prayers are done. Usually a beautiful book. They used to give it when we went to the center. It's called Taking Refuge. It's a very beautiful, they even give you a Tibetan name. That's fascinating. They give you a little name here and you get a book. And in other words, you've taken a commitment that now you are in a path of the teachings. That's the teaching. There are many vows. For lay people, there are 5 vows. So when you take a refuge, okay, so there are lay vows. You don't kill, you don't steal, no adultery or no misconduct or sexual misconduct, no intoxicant. Basically, sometimes they say no alcohol. And then I think there's one more. I will find out. And, oh, yeah, drinking alcohol. So killing, taking that's not yours, sexual misconduct, telling lies and drinking alcohol. Now, when you take the refuge, you don't have to take every one of those. You don't have to commit to all of them. You can commit to 1, 2, 3, 4, or all of them. The commitment is you, your mind. So think about that. It's not to show anybody. This is not to label anybody. You determine in your mind, I will make effort not to kill. I will not kill anybody intentionally. Is that good for you? And that's one vow you take. Taking what's not given to you. You make every effort not to do that. There is a difference between intentional taking and just taking a pen and saying, yeah, sure, write down you by mistake, putting it. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about intentionally stealing. Okay? So these are some vows. If you have any questions, there's a lot of good writing on different places. At one point, I will let you know all the resources I go to, the FPMT sites, Lama Yeshe Archives for dictionary, beautiful articles on so many things. Learning Buddhism, it's called Birds in Archives. Venerable Thupten Chodron site, I visit, beautifully written, everything is there. They're part of our Gelug tradition, well-known teachers, many of them are invited to Kadampa Center many times and have taught. So I rely on lineage teachers. Venerable Rubina, Venerable Chernoff, all of these people. So I will always find, and then I have Lamrim, and so what I do is I'll take Pabongka Rinpoche's Liberation in Palm of Your Hand, and I'll go through the reading. I have Lamrim, so whenever he talks about refuge, I'll flip the pages and make sure I understand it. I take notes and for the class purposes, and I've written down everything, all the kind of vows people take, and they use words like Patimoksha vows and Bodhisattva vows, and nuns and monks take even higher levels of vows. For right now, our goal is, if you are ready or if you want to be ready, prepare yourself, you request a teacher, and you take refuge if you are convinced that this is the path you want to take, and now you are on the Buddhist path. So that's about refuge. Any questions on that?
Hey, Matt, we do have a couple of questions going back to realms and rebirth. Do you want to answer those now?
Sure.
Okay, so the first one is from Kelly, and it asks, if you are reborn in the human realm, how do you know you'll be born in a circumstance or environment where practice is allowed? Maybe you would be reborn in a country where any form of Buddhism is not allowed.
Right. And I did give an example that even in human realms, there are different levels of people's karma. We'll cover that in the karma class, environmental karma, ripening karma. It's possible that you can be born in a human realm and suffer. That's not the point. Point is, if you have the faculties and if you are in a place where these Dharma teachings are there and in good sense, that's a very proper birth to have to practice Dharma. If that's what we talked about, pets. You could have a dog living in a billionaire's house who has everything, and there's a dog outside who is always looking at the back or taking pics of his body. We have different levels based on your karma. At this point in time, the goal is that you are in the class, you are learning, you need to investigate. This is not converting, this is not pushing people. Geshe-la says, we don't put labels on ourselves. It is truly changing our heart and mind. And so all I can present is what Buddha taught. And it is up to us to say, yes, this is very nicely put together. I will follow this path, then you take refuge. So in terms of human birth, it's not a guarantee, depending on your karmic activity, group activity, karmic activity, tendencies. We are born in different stages or different places in different times. So that's why the importance and the urgency, right? When we don't say that, oh my God, this is not about getting you to regret or guilt trip or feeling making you depressed or anything like that. It is presented in a factual way. You have this opportunity. If you think this is correct thinking, then we can do something about it. Simple as that.
And the other question is from Julie asking, what about the Tushita realm?
Yeah, so these are, if you go beyond, there are other higher level realms. There are like 31 planes, and that's why I said you may want to read about it. There's Sukhvati and Tushita, where this is what we would wish, that I be liberated, become enlightened, because Buddha came from there. Buddha came from the next Buddha, Maitreya, is going to come from Tushita. Okay, so this is a realm of pure, they call pure land, pure place, pure realm, pure dimension. I can't speak details about that, but if my ultimate wish would be to become enlightened, and may I be in Tushita realms and be able to come back and help where it's needed, and be able to have the propensity to come and help in any shape or form other sentient beings to be liberated. That would be my desire or wish. But there is a big, beautiful writings on different realms and how they are there. And I mean, it requires a little bit of reading. All of these things are introductory, right? You're just getting an idea of how the thoughts are, where some of the topics are. You can dive into it. Well, I want to know all the desire realms. And even within the realms, I forgot to mention that there are form and formless beings. Now, that's a whole write-up on that. What is a formless being and what is a form being? And how does it all work? Okay? So you may want to dig deeper into it. Otherwise, and we have, I'm sure, classes on these things. So we can certainly talk to Geshe-la and read more. And you'll find out it is not out of touch. I mean, you can just pick up the reading requirements and you can find this.
Right. So the death and rebirth module is coming up later in the summer, module 5, and then karma is right after that. So two good modules right in a row. Couple more questions if you're up for it, Hemant. Okay, Giovanna asks, is the subtle consciousness suffering during the move out of the body and to rebirth? And then the second part of the question is, where is the consciousness during this period?
Well, it is still with you. Subtle consciousness is a consciousness. So it's with you. It's not totally gone yet. So just because the outward gross consciousnesses of form, the earth element and the fire element and the water element dissolves, you may appear like gone, you shrunk a little bit, you look thin, you're not moving, so people think you're finished. But there are still things going on within your sub-level of consciousnesses. Those energies are still working and they become this very small, subtle drop, they call it, in the heart. That's when the propensity is to leave out, to go. That's when you are dead, right? In other words. And then that mind goes out at that point. It's like a dream state. It's on autopilot. It's looking for identity. It's looking for places. And based on your seeds, based on your karma, it will take birth immediately, or it can take up to 49 days to find another birth. And again, that birth will be based on your mind, quality of your mind, at the time that seed, that consciousness leaves your body. This is very internal. You are just going, these are experiences inside. You're not, you know, unless you are a highly advanced yogi and control your awareness at that time, you may be able to control that. But for normal, it happens during a couple of days, right? So you are in a hospital or home and your body is stiff now and you think you're dead. But they say to keep it for a couple of days because there are still internal subconscious level energies that are moving and doing things. And so to keep the environment clean, in traditions like Tibet and some parts of India, they even make it like a shrine. You know, it's very quiet, it's very beautiful, it's kept in a good position, and after 3 or 4 days, then they cremate or whatever the last rites are, and then the person is the body is gotten rid of. So the body is gone, consciousness continues. Okay. And again, I can certainly share some books with you. One of the book is, I think I may have it written down. Give me 1 second. It's a Jeffrey Hopkins book. It's a very good, it's Death, Intermediate Steps, and Consciousness. And then, go to my library here. I love this book. It is called How to Enjoy Death. Okay, it's a red book, gold color pages. And it is Preparing to Meet Your Life's Final Challenge Without Fear, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. FPNT carries this book. Amazing book.
Okay. Thank you.
So I would say take time, go through this process, read about it, and you will see that answer. And if you don't get an answer, send me an email. If I don't know, I'll find out from Geshe-la. Okay?
Thank you. Hey, we have one more in regards to, I think, the lay vow of not killing. Do you want to answer that one now? We are at 8:15, so.
This invariably comes in. Again, there's a tremendous amount of writing of what is intentional killing and what is not an intentional killing. And when we start talking about karma, there is an example of that. There's an example of this young lady who says, oh, I have an ant in my house. I don't like it. I don't like this ant. I have an intention. I want to hurt it. And then I complete the action by smashing it. Karma is complete. You have killed. Now take another person, say Paula, who happens to sit on a countertop and the ant just gets smushed. Was it intention to kill the ant? No. So karma is very complex. There are different levels of karma, but there's ways to look at it. You can go to very little subtleties. I mean, you can go into hours of discussions on it. The idea here is there is an intentional wish to hurt, kill, to take somebody's life, or something's life, any life as being, is very different than not doing it yourself. There are also levels. If somebody else does it and it's in front of you, you do it with an intention and complete it, and that's your state of mind. It's all about how your mind is at that point. And we can go into detail. So I think in karma, we'll cover some of these things, and these questions will come up. And we can even have a discussion on it at some point. But I think at least know for right now that there is a difference between intentional, motivated killing versus you're walking and breathing bacteria are going in and out. Is there karma of death? You're not intentionally killing them.
Rebecca's question was a little bit more specific. I didn't read the whole thing. So she asked, what about people like the Nazis during the Holocaust? Should people like the designers of the Final Solution and their evil have been allowed to continue to live? So is killing for justice and a safer world okay?
Well, the best knowledge I have is they don't want intentional killings. There are punishments, there are laws, there are policies. We want to avoid larger harm to people. There are cases where maybe one intentional killing, you still are karmically bound, but you save 49 people. So then the intensity of that karma is much lesser, right? So you look at the ultimate motivation behind it. So there's a lot on that written down. I don't think so that I can express that because somebody did something wrong, that was the karma of a person dying, person creating a karma, and there are ramifications to those karmic activities that will go on. But for an individual to say, I will kill you, is still karmic. Intensity varies depending on the intention. And if you think that if by doing something small does a larger good, your intention is of larger good, not the idea of killing. Maybe that's where we want to stop at this point.
Yeah. And Hema, if I remember correctly as well, just to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, is you need the wisdom behind that decision. And, you know, we may think that we have the wisdom, but maybe we really don't have the wisdom.
Right. It's like getting, like Geshe-la says, somebody is yelling at you, so you become angry. It's a natural reaction, you call it. So then what is the point? So Geshe-la says, now you have two crazy people. One who's already mad and now you're mad. What did that resolve? It's about the eighth transformational thought, right? The number three. And if somebody does that, you have a choice. You can say stop or walk away. That doesn't mean anything. It's just your state of mind. Or you can have conversation without getting real aversion. You don't want to say, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to burn you. You don't want to create that kind of mindset. You're training your mind to be stable. So that's the way to look at it. So of course, I'm not an author on this. Obviously, I've done a lot of reading on it, and I can speak to it to a certain point, but I think it would be better. There's a whole module on karma, and I think we'll cover some of these concerns, and these are very legitimate questions. So not to minimize the question at all. These are real questions, and I think we should investigate this further, and we should consider this deeply in our mind. Who are we to make certain decisions? Are we killing off? You look at how many people are put in the jail legitimately and then find out 25 years later they did not commit the crime. That happens too. Right? So we got to think about it, but it's intentional killing is what the word is. You're motivated to really kill somebody. To satisfy, could be satisfying ego or simply because you think that's the right thing to do. So we got to think through that. Okay? I know that I probably didn't answer exactly all the answers properly, probably, but we can certainly talk about it. Okay. We have coming to the close. I wanted to get to at least some piece of karma. We'll at least talk for 5 minutes and then do dedication. Sorry. I just want to be careful that we keep up on time.
And they were great questions, so thank you for taking the time to answer them.
That is part of the investigation, Linda. The investigation in your mind, if this question comes up, means you have a question, and we need to either answer it, find a way to answer it, or look it up. I am not denying that at all. But right now, according to the law of karma, there is a difference between unintentional killing, or there are levels of intentions, and all, so it's much more complex than a simple black and white. You do this, it's bad, and you do this, it's good. It's not like that. There's a lot of intricacies. But at least we fundamentally know that if you finish the whole idea of I want to kill, and you take the action and you finish it, then the karma is on you. Okay? So what is karma? It is cause and effect. So just like every cause and effect, we talked about every cause, you have an effect. That cause has an effect. That cause has an effect. Our mind works that way. All the actions we do have that same continuity. Positive actions produce happiness, and negative or non-virtuous actions produce suffering. Okay. And sometimes we have jokes about karma. Somebody does something wrong and something happens to that person. Aha, karma. It's a little more than that, right? It's long-term also, okay? You think of the type of seed you put in the ground, and if you nurture it right, a beautiful tree ripens, right? If you don't take care of it, it may not survive. So causes and conditions play a role. So at least we are familiar with that. I keep on going backwards. The laws of karma are natural. Simply like gravity. So Isaac Newton didn't create gravity. He worked very hard. He observed and he said, this is gravity. Same way, karma is like a natural law. See, nobody discovered it. It's just a natural law. Okay? So we'll cover these actions. Just one more slide, I think. Okay. Maybe two slides. All actions of body, speech, and mind created with attitude of greed, hatred, and ignorantly to suffering. That kind of answers a little bit of intention. From all actions created with the opposite attitudes of love, compassion, and wisdom, only happiness comes. And then we'll go a little bit, maybe a minute or two later on, next class, on the 10 non-virtuous actions of killing of body, speech, and mind, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, speaking harshly, slander or divisive speech, gossip, meaningless speech, idle speech, covetousness, wanting to have somebody else's stuff, right? Ill will, anger, and wrong views, not understanding the nature of karma, cause and effect, how things exist, some wrong views. So these connect karma to ethical behavior. And so once you know this to avoid, then there are obviously 10 virtuous actions or antidotes to this. It's like if you say killing does not mean just avoid killing, but taking positive action, proactive action of helping somebody. Okay, you go beyond. And stealing, you already know. You work so hard all your life and you don't like somebody taking your stuff away. So think of the mindset of a person that loses it. So things in those terms. And in sexual misconduct, they're talking about things like rape or adultery and things like that. Okay. Again, lots of writing on all of this subject matter. What does it really mean? You know, some of you might have, it's called Studying Buddhism. It's Burzin Archives. It's a huge program, huge scholarly writings and training. Okay. And you can just about pick up on any of the subjects and go into really nice details and explains you based on Buddha's teachings. Visuddha, where it's at, what does it mean, how is it divided, what various meanings can come out of this, all that kind of stuff is written down. Okay, and on a lot of these things, you have a whole class on karma, right? So they will this will be covered very, very deeply, I mean, with more details in it. But at least for right now, understand that when we talk about karma, it's not just your body. It's the body, speech, and mind. Everything you do, you create your reality. Good mind, good reality. Bad mind, bad reality. Right? Reality in conventional sense. So any questions so far other than what we just covered? And I would welcome those questions, and if you want to have a chat, I will certainly get into more details of what that means, and we can work together on that. But I just wanted to cover it at this point. Now, I do know that next class, I want to finish karma. We're going to get into the second scope. So with karma, you've covered the lower scope. So all these topics covered what? Striving for better future life. Now, in the next scope, you're going to learn about what this samsara is all about. Knowing karma, knowing refuge, knowing suffering of the lower realms, knowing the precious human rebirth and death and impermanence. You now are prepared to talk about why do we keep coming back? What kind of suffering is there? What are the Four Noble Truths? And how are we, what do we do that keeps us coming back again and again and again? And I don't want to let this happen to me. And that's when you develop renunciation. So we will have a meditation on renunciation. Okay? So that's what we will try to cover. And then the third class, of course, the following class will cover the great scope, and depending on topic, it may lead into one of the last classes, and we'll summarize everything. So far on path with me? Okay, everybody's following how we are taking step at a time and why these topics are important in the beginning so that we can understand the larger piece to it. And so it's taking you slowly into the middle scope, into the larger scope, and then you can take this perspective. And these questions should come up in your mind. What does this mean? What does that mean? Then you start to dig into it. Then you take that and you learn about it. You answer the questions. You do meditation on it. You analyze it. And then come to your conclusion if this is correct thinking or not. Okay? So with that, I think we'll dedicate today's class. Give me 1 second. I have a little dedication that I wrote down for today's class, actually. So we'll cover that. Okay. So again, just take a moment here. Get your mind organized. So let's just finish with a little dedication prayer thinking, okay, we've listened so far to the concept of continuity of consciousness, to the nature of mind. It is beginningless. It is non-physical, not created, and its potential, especially of Buddhahood. We've contemplated the concept of needing a teacher, how to check them and judge them, and how to devote oneself. We've looked very briefly at the thought of this perfect human rebirth and how to be energized and not wasted. We then thought about how our life could end at any moment. So thinking about death and impermanence. We looked at death process itself, and we looked at the concept that I could die at any moment, and given that I have got countless karmic imprints, the potential for future rebirth. We looked particularly at one of the sufferings of being born in one of the lower realms, and to get a strong sense of wishing for methods to avoid, and the type of birth and turning to Buddha for refuge. We just started talking about karma and abiding by the laws of karma. So those seeds have gone in. And we've thought about these, we'll continue to think about these, May they ripen as quickly as possible in the development of my own amazing potential, so I really can be a benefit to all sentient beings. In the last, I want to end with a quote. Every single moment of our precious human life gives us the opportunity to purify eons of negative karma and take great steps towards enlightenment by engaging in the profound practices of Mahayana path. Thank you.
Thank you, Hemant.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
I'll stick around if you have any, want to talk a little bit. Any concerns? Did we get lost? Let me know.
And for homework, just continue the readings. Is that it, Hemant?
I would say, very honestly, the second reading, if you've already completed it, I want you to read it again. I found that reading so powerful because it talks about method, the wisdom, and the three paths. It kind of puts everything in a summary, and there are words in there you need to contemplate on about the precious human rebirth and why do you do the methods as the unconventional life and why do you think of wisdom and how they work together. It is very powerful, and I found that the third time around I was like, wow, this is amazing stuff. And so I would suggest to you, rather than giving you further reading, that we go and read that again. And I may even talk about it. Actually, I was prepared to talk about it, but didn't have time.
You're talking about the readings that were in Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand?
No.
I'm sorry.
Because the required reading, there are three particular reading requirements.
The three the regular, two, yeah, okay.
And then the second one is this one, the wisdom, the method, and the three paths. It should be in your, should be in the Kadampa Center's link. It's called required readings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, Kabonga Rinpoche reading is also there. You know, the pages are written down, those are the pages. If you read that, augment all your readings. So guys, so far so good. You guys are following me.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Hemant. I'll see everyone next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, Janet.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.